a taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Welcome to 3CR Spoken Word Show. My name is Indrani Pereira, and I'm broadcasting from the lands the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Stolen land. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Spoken word and poetry come from the heart and touch all the topics peculiar to the human condition. As such, there may be content in this show that could cause distress. Please practice self-care when listening and speak to someone if you need to. For the next half an hour, I'm going to be interviewing Deb Almer, founder of The Poetry Pharmacy UK. The Poetry Pharmacy is a UK-based bookseller with three physical bookshops, an online presence, and a lively program of events. It reimagines poetry as a form of medicine, offering carefully chosen poems and prescriptions to help people navigate the emotional terrain of everyday life. Welcome to the show, Deb.
Hi there, Indrani. It's really lovely to see you. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, it is such a pleasure. And I have to start the show by saying I am a massive fan of the Poetry Pharmacy. I think it's a completely genius idea. But I'm aware that our listeners might have no idea what a Poetry Pharmacy actually is. So I'm wondering if you can tell us, what is a Poetry Pharmacy?
Oh, well, yeah, it was a crazy idea, really, which I set up. Well, you know, we'll talk about where it comes from, I guess, in a bit. But it basically, I'm here in Shropshire, which is on the Welsh borders, very rural, in the middle of nowhere. There's not a train station. It's really an isolated place. And against all advice and all odds, I set up the Poetry Pharmacy, which is, I describe it as a place for poetry. It's somewhere that is a mix of things. It's a bookshop. Bookshop is laid out unusually, and we could talk about that later maybe too, but it's laid out by emotional states. So you shop according to your needs. So if you have a broken heart, there are books of poetry, philosophy, psychology on that subject. And it's a coffee shop with good coffee. Poetry is served with the coffee, you know, on the tables, and that the whole kind of conceit of medicine, poetry is medicine, runs right through the place. So, and we also have our own bottles of poetry pills with scrolls of paper with extracts of poems written on them, various emotional states from broken heart to empty nest syndrome and more. Also, we have here in Shropshire, we have a big poetry reference library. We have workshop space. We have book clubs, book groups, open mics, workshops, poetry walks, lots of things. And that's the kind of original Poetry Pharmacy. And now we have two others.
So I just want to say I want to move to Shropshire and come and live at the Poetry Pharmacy. I mean, the reference library, the poetry walks, it all sounds incredible. And I'm wondering, you say Shropshire is on the Welsh border and it's in the middle of nowhere from what I can make out. So does that mean people come to you?
Yeah, it was a kind of a crazy idea, you know, that everyone know, you know, I did it in 2019. I don't know if it's the same where you are, but, you know, in the UK, the UK high street is struggling. It's a well-known fact that poetry doesn't sell and we're in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, all my friends and family, hey, great idea, Deb. You know, so no one's going to come and there's tumbleweed down the street. But I had been doing a project called an emergency poet, which, again, we may talk about. But I'd been going to literary festivals, art festivals, music festivals, schools, libraries for years and was very embedded in the poetry and wider literary community in the UK. And we had quite a lot of media attention around that work. And I had this kind of conviction that if it was wonderful enough, you know, if it was interesting enough, that people would come and find us. And they did. Yeah, right from the beginning, we had lots of media attention. And it's just kind of kept growing in a really odd and very surprising way.
I love your audacity and your conviction and the fact that everyone thought you were crazy and you still went ahead and did it. And I'm intrigued as well as a poet, like what's an emergency poet? Do you like break some glass and someone pops out and reads you a poem?
Well, yeah, it kind of started years ago, I'm very old now, but years ago, I used to work with people with dementia using poetry. And in that process, learnt that people's mood could be profoundly changed by reading a poem, or they could be taken somewhere. They could be taken to the sea. They could go on a picnic in their minds with a poem. And I also learned that people loved to be asked really lovely questions, delicious questions, you know, nothing to do with memory, but, you know, tell me about standing by the sea, you know, and off we'd go. And I was looking on eBay, as you do, thinking I might buy a camper van, and kind of just dreaming, but I didn't have any money, and came across a 1950s ambulance in terrible condition for sale. And on this mad whim, left a bid and ended up buying it with the idea that I would become an emergency poet. So I painted emergency poet on the side, dressed up as a doctor, and went to a poetry festival and offered poetry on prescription. And I thought, well, obviously it's a ridiculous idea, but I was then invited to two more festivals, and then four festivals. And then in the end, I was able to give up a sensible job and become a full-time emergency poet, which is quite an odd thing to do.
I think that's incredible because, like you say, everyone knows that poetry doesn't sell. Everyone wants to get their poetry book published, of course, but, you know, it doesn't sell. And the fact that you could quit a sensible job, which I also read is possibly quite boring, and be an emergency poet, that's incredible. It's so amazing.
Yes, I think lots of people were very surprised. And my teenage sons, I was a single parent at the time, my teenage sons were horribly embarrassed. Oh, Mum, why do you park that ambulance outside? Please don't pick me up in it.
But I guess the last on you now, right?
Well, yeah, actually, I've employed my younger son now. So, yeah, he's getting into poetry. Yeah, definitely.
That's a massive win. That's a huge win. I absolutely adore the poetry pharmacy pills and the prescriptions that you do that go with the pills. And I think I read somewhere that you refer to them as poemcetamol. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we do have a bottle called poemcetamol, and broadly, you know, I describe them as poemcetamol. I don't know if you have paracetamol there in Australia. So obviously the pun is on that. I don't think it works very well in the States, actually, because they call the drug by another name. But
that's okay. If they don't get it, I think that's fine.
No.
So I'm wondering if you have a poem that you would prescribe for our listeners. So we're in autumn currently. I'm in Naarm in Melbourne, and we have had a beautiful autumn day, but it's Melbourne, and the joke about Melbourne weather, I don't know if you've heard it, is that if you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes.
It's like that here in the UK, isn't it? So yeah, that's great.
I'm wondering if you could find a poem for us, something to do with autumn, if that's not too broad an ask.
Where? Yeah, Poem of Autumn. I edited an anthology for National Trust Book of Nature Poems. This poem is called On the First Day of Autumn by Jason Alain Paysan. I give myself permission to go outside so nature can have a different look and a different sound. A different sound in the stream running over stones, a different look in the floor of yellow leaves of autumn just begun. I allow myself to listen, to have rest in squirrels that run above my head. On the first day of autumn, I think about a tree uprooted and thrown down that has sent some of its roots back into the ground. Walking my mind in the dugout road of this tree, in its bowl of rotting leaves. This is the farthest I have come to the edge of the world. A human walking on a tree, hanging my mind from the tussling odours of mulch, bark and rain, from a latticewood of limbs and roots exposed in a hanging grimace. This is the farthest I have come to the edge of the world, to the edge of the work of making the land home. So land can have a different look and a different sound, not of angry dogs and knives, but the sound of my feet pressing down into the flesh of the leaves.
You just heard Deb Almer from the Poetry Pharmacy in the UK reading the poem On the First Day of Autumn by Jason Alain Paisson. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. The poem was amazing. There was so much movement in it. That feels very autumn to me when we get all the winds coming through and the weather's all changing, those gusts and squalls. So it was perfect, a beautiful autumn prescription, I think.
As a black man, he writes a lot about a kind of the permission for the kind of black community hasn't traditionally been people that write about going out into nature. And I guess this poem is about making nature home as well for him and his community.
I've got so many questions to ask you. It's kind of hard to know where to start. So we've talked about how you started out being the emergency poet, and also that before that you were working with people who had dementia and asking them the delicious questions and reading poems. So were you doing that as a volunteer? Like, how did you come to doing that in the first place?
That's an interesting question. I was doing my MA in creative writing and discovering that I was a poet of sorts. And there was a job advertised. It was, you know, very limited, and it was part of an Arts Council funded project through theatre in the city of Hereford. And they were asking four poets to be part of this arts project, which was a kind of outreach into dementia care settings, whether it was early diagnosis dementia or late life, or, you know, secure dementia units. And yeah, so the four of us were part of a project by poet John Killick, who's written about the project, actually. I think his books are available. I didn't say that I was a poet when I went in, because we know, don't we, that people go, oh my goodness, a poet. And they're frightened of poetry quite often. So I would just go in and sit and chat to people. And then, you know, we'd talk about a thing and maybe I'd share them a poem. And then I'd also make poems from their words. So I'd record what they said verbatim and then turn what they said into a poem. I remember one man, he couldn't find the word for a car, and he described them as tin boxes on the road, which is beautifully poetic, isn't it? And if you, there's something about putting that, his description into a poem. I didn't add anything, it was just his own words, but it elevated his way of seeing rather than diminishing it. And it was a really rewarding thing to do.
So when you were recording those conversations verbatim and those words and turning them into poems, would you then read those poems back to the speaker?
Yes, absolutely. That was the fundamental part of it. I would take it back to them. I'd go a couple of times a week and craft the poem, not add anything, just edit, take bits away and take it back to them, read it to them. And every time they would say, that's just right, that's just right. And it was their poem, it was not mine, you know, and they would share it with staff, with the other people there. We had poetry readings. It was really a wonderful project, actually, full of meaning. And quite often you would unlock something in somebody that hadn't been seen for a long time. I used to do things like wine tasting or cheese tasting, or it was cider country. So I'd have lots of different types of cider and we'd try them, and it would, those smells and tastes would unlock something in their memory. It was really useful for staff getting to know about those people who had stopped speaking in many cases. So it was really good.
So when you say they stopped speaking, would they start speaking when you would read them poems?
Sometimes I did lots of different things. I remember this man who hadn't said anything for a couple of years. He'd just stopped speaking. And one of the ciders was pear cider. He just said this single word, pear. He just said pear. And it was an extraordinary moment. You know, the staff were really moved. But quite often, I think there was a generation of people who learned poetry by heart at school. So there are certain poems that I would share in a group, and you just find that most people would know the poem. It's called Sea Fever by John Masefield. I must go down to the sea again, to the lonely sea and sky. And I'd start reading that and people would just recite it along with me, and that was wonderful.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app. But it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are. At home, work, driving.
On public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
You're listening to 3CR's Spoken Word Show, 855 on the AM dial. My name is Indrani Pereira and I'm interviewing poet and founder of the Poetry Pharmacy in the UK, Deb Almer, co-founder, I believe. And before the break, Deb and I were chatting about her experience in taking poetry to people with dementia and reading them poems, making poems from their words, and having them join in when they knew a poem, which I just think would have been such an incredible experience.
Yeah, it was wonderful. There's a quite a well-known poem by Welsh poet Gillian Clark, which you can look up online, called Miracle on St. David's Day. And it describes in the poem a similar experience that she had when reading a poem out loud.
We're talking all things Poetry Pharmacy. And I was lucky enough at the start of last year to visit the shop in London above the Lush store, and it was incredible. Sadly, I only had 45 minutes to madly soak in everything. And I just wondered, you mentioned earlier in the episode about the layout, and I wondered if you wanted to talk a little bit more about the layout of the store, because they are so beautiful. You walk in and before you've even looked at anything, like, it just feels so nourishing and nurturing and wholesome. So I just wondered if you wanted to speak about the layout.
Yeah, that's lovely to hear. I think it's really important to me that the aesthetic of the place is very strong and welcoming, because as we know, people are quite often put off by the word poetry. So I want it to look attractive. I describe it as a poetry sweet shop. So there's lots of colour and, sort of, it looks lovely. But fundamentally, it's laid out by emotional state. So it starts with the first aid section, books around what you might need if you're feeling, overwrought or stressed, or, a kind of an emergency poem or emergency book around emotional well-being or good health. And then it moves almost as the kind of through a life, and people are invited to shop intuitively, to stand in front of a section that appeals to them. So each shelf needs to relate to the shelf next to it, or that you might find a book next to another book that has a relationship that may not immediately be obvious. The second section is called Calm. So you've got first aid, and then the second section is books to address that, the kind of benefits of rest, silence, and books around being calm, addressing anxiety and so on. Then there's a section called Becoming, which are books on kind of becoming yourself properly in the world, of confidence, queer literature, books of feminism, kind of finding your own voice. And then that moves into Words for Love, starting from Falling in Love, Being in Love, Broken Heart, books, poems to read at a wedding, and then relationships, motherhood, fathers, family. The section after that is called Comfort, which are books on, mental poor health, ill health, aging, dying. And so that you would find there the books on helping you in those states, but also poems to read at a funeral, books then on recovery, and then it moves into hope and happiness. The section after that is Wild Remedy, and the idea of nature, going outside, being good for your mental health. And then finally, we have a section called Inspiration, which is books for addressing your creative self, really, I suppose, as well as inspiring you to take action, maybe. But generally, journaling. And in that section, we have gorgeous stationery and journals and books for writing your own poetry or art. So yeah, and that's it. And then in Shropshire, we have a good children's section. We have a third bookshop just opened in York that has a room at the back, which we call the Cabinet of Curiosities. And in that cupboard, we have our poison section, which is quite good fun as well.
So before we talk about the poison section, which I'm really interested to learn about, I was wondering, it sounds like there's 8 different sections or emotional states that you've got in the shop. And I'm wondering how you kind of distilled all of like a human, you know, emotional experience into those 8 sections. Yeah, like how do you go about doing that?
That's a really good question. And Emergency Poet, because it was so theatrical and very visual, had quite a lot of media attention. And I was invited to put together an anthology, and that was in 2015. It was called The Emergency Poet, an Anti-Stress Poetry Anthology, which is now 10 years old. They were the poems I most often prescribed to people in the back of the ambulance. And I was instinctively, you know, as a reader, you want to put it into a kind of narrative. And so the chapters of that book are pretty much these sections of the shop, you know, the narrative of life, you know, what you might need immediately. And then, you know, through a life and living a hopeful life as well. So, yeah, but also, you know, when I set up the shop in Shropshire, you make decisions quite quickly and intuitively, you know, I kind of wonder, but it seemed to work. So, you know, if you're in one section and you're looking at books of grief and loss, just to your right are poems of hope and happiness, you know, so that's what you might need. So it seems to work in that way.
I love that, you know, the beginnings, you being an emergency poet and working with people with dementia, it's kind of underpinned everything, and it sort of seems to have all grown organically and sort of fit together beautifully with the way that the emotions, they make sense. And when you say that it came about after, with your work of being an emergency poet, well, then it makes sense, because, of course, as an emergency poet, you would start with first aid. And then you want to calm down your patient, you know, and then help them become who they're meant to be, and then love, and on through everything to land at inspiration. It's genius. I can't use the word enough today.
Yeah, I have to write that down, and well, I'll make my children listen to my grown up children listen to that. I don't know about genius.
No, it is. It's fantastic. And I'm wondering, at what point did you start putting the little lines of poetry into pills, into bottles?
I did that right at the beginning with the ambulance. One of the reasons underpinning all of it is the kind of evangelical desire to say to people who don't normally read poetry that this is for you, and to get it to them in ways that are approachable and accessible and fun and lighthearted, and to say, stand in front of it and just respond to it without being intimidated by it. So at a festival, the first festival I went to, I learned really quickly that not everybody, people were interested, but I couldn't see everybody. I'd have queues of people for the consultations. And so I developed this pharmacy outside the ambulance under an awning with Nurse First there to attend to people so that people could self-diagnose in their pharmacy. So they were giveaways so that people could engage with poetry, just have a little bit and take it away with them in a fun way. So they, for years, I gave them away. And then when I opened the bookshop, they were largely there to explain the conceit, you know, to underpin the idea of pharmacy. And I was astonished to find that people wanted to buy them. You know, I felt, you know, that was ridiculous. And now we're upstairs in Lush on Oxford Street. So we've come from the middle of nowhere to the busiest shopping street in the world. And it went viral. We had millions of views. We were invited I've been on the Kelly Clarkson show, would you believe? And then NBC News did a feature. And suddenly these pill bottles were selling all over the world. And so that was a bit of a shock. But yeah, but as you say, it's very organic. I never have a decision or a plan or an objective. I just enjoy seeing where it goes. And it seems to have gone very far. And, you know, I'm talking to you in Australia, which is remarkable.
Well, it's wonderful to speak to someone who followed their passions and did what they loved and has had this massive impact. And it's so beautiful, those little bottles of pills. So they're these little glass bottles. I don't know how tall that is, because I'm maybe 10 centimetres high. And they're filled with the little capsules that you normally get your vitamins in. But instead of having a little powder inside, you've got this lovely little scroll with a poetry quote in it. And the capsules are gorgeous, so they're different colours, you know. Like, I think it's the happy pills are all colours of the rainbow, basically, from what I can remember. And I think Wild Remedy is my favourite, because just the name Wild Remedy, I love the name. It just encapsulates all the good that nature can do for our souls, you know. And those pills are beautiful, that green of those pills is just astonishing. I really recommend our listeners to go online, check out the Poetry Pharmacy in the UK and see all the incredible stuff, because it's fantastic.
Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. And I thought, like, the time has just flown. We're pretty much come to the end of the show. And I thought perhaps you could share with us a final poem. We didn't get to have too many poems because we've had too much fun talking.
Yeah, I have a poem here, which is from the poetry anthology First Aid, and it's by Rosemary Wartola Trommer, an American poet, and it's called "But You Thought You Knew What a Sign Looked Like," and there's an epigram: "Open your hands, lift them," by William Stafford. The parking space beside the store when you were late, the man who showed up just in time to hold the door when you were juggling five big packages, the spider plant that grew though you forgot to water it, the new nest in the tree outside your window, chime of distant church bells when you're lonely, rhyme of friendship, apples, sky, a trove of blue. And who's to say these miracles are less significant than burning bushes, loaves and fishes, steps on water? We are blessed by marvels wearing ordinary clothes. How easily we're fooled by simple dress. Oranges, water, leaves, bread, crows.
Oh, that was a beautiful poem, such incredible imagery. And for the listeners, you just heard Deb Almer from the Poetry Pharmacy with the poem, I hope I've got the title right here, "What You Thought You Knew What a Sign Looked Like."
But You Thought You Knew What a Sign Looked Like.
By the poet Rosemary
Wartola Trommer.
And thank you so much, Deb, for joining me today on the show.
You're welcome. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you for being so interested and for calling me a genius. I'm going to take that all day.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And thanks to listeners for tuning into 3CR Spoken Word Show. If you enjoyed hearing this episode, you can play it again over on our podcast page, where you'll also find our extensive archive of spoken word. Head on over to www.3cr.org.au/spokenword and get lost in a sea of words. And remember to tune in to Spoken Word every Thursday at 9 a.m. here on 3CR for more spoken word goodness.